Good evening. We're here tonight to discuss the challenge of transitioning the spiritual growth and achievements of our children and students over the summer back into the more mainstream life of our everyday educational experience. And I want to begin with a story that perhaps is about a student that has somewhat of a different background than that of the families that are probably watching this presentation. But I think there's something very instructive about the story. It's a very inspirational story for all of us in terms of our attitude and our approach when our students and our children return from their experiences over the summer. The story is of a young woman named Hannah. And Hannah grew up in a fairly unaffiliated home. Her parents did not attend synagogue with any sort of regularity. They certainly were not observant. And I met Hannah in the context of a public school club being run by NCSY in her public school in New Jersey. And we had developed somewhat of a mentoring relationship. And Hannah agreed to attend one of NCSY's summer programs, our program called TJJ. And Hannah went for the summer to Israel on this extremely moving and enriching and inspirational program. Her experience was absolutely transcendent. And she grew in so many different ways. She grew in her commitment to Israel. She grew in her commitment to spirituality. She grew in her commitment to observance. And on the way home, on the final leg of the trip, when they had all of the students gathered at the Kotel, they asked the students that everyone should emerge from the summer with one concrete goal, with one concrete change, with one concrete plan to try to enhance their relationship and their Jewish identity. And Hannah, for some reason, still to this day, I don't completely know why, Hannah chose kashrut to be her ambition, to be her goal, to be her plan. And Hannah returned to her home on that plane and entered her house after being away for a month. Her parents were very excited to see her. They had never been to Israel before. So for them, this was a great challenge to send their daughter off, 7,000 miles away. Hannah walks into the home, everybody sits down, and her parents say to her, how was the trip? How was the experience? She starts telling stories. And then Hannah relates to her parents that she made a decision. And the decision is that from this point forward, she wants to keep kosher. So her parents' first reaction was extremely negative. Parents say to them, we sent you away for a month, and here you return. And the first thing you want to do is take on something that's going to have such an impact and effect on our family. And Hannah tries to explain that the truth is many of the foods that they buy are kosher. And in fact, there is so much, she lived in Bergen County, there are so many different places and opportunities to be able to purchase kosher food. So Hannah tried to explain to them this really is not that difficult a transition as it seems. And she did her best to advocate for this transition that she wanted to make, for this transformation that she wanted to take place. Her parents were still extremely hesitant about it. They were pretty negative about it, pretty critical about it, pretty cynical about it. And Hannah, exhausted from the flight back from Israel and from the end of the trip that certainly had the students traveling all over the length and breadth of Israel in terms of late nights. So exhausted, she returns to her room and she goes to sleep. She goes to sleep. Meanwhile, her parents are downstairs. They're having a discussion about the fact that the reason why they let their daughter go on the trip in the first place was they had actually been amongst those Jews who had escaped from Russia, escaped from the USSR, come to America to find a better life, to find freedom. One of the things that they ran away from was their Judaism because they just simply were not interested in perpetuating the elements of their life that really were the ultimate cause of so much of the anti-Semitism that they experienced. And so they settled and they planted their roots here in Bergen County, New Jersey, not probably even realizing the degree to which the area was so saturated with a vibrant Jewish life. And they began to talk more and more, and Hannah's sleeping away in her room. And about 5 or 6 hours later, Hannah awakens. And Hannah comes down the stairs and walks into the kitchen of her home and begins to open the cabinets to get herself something to eat. And all of a sudden, she realizes that her entire kitchen is completely stocked with kosher food. Everything ranging from kosher meat to kosher cheeses to kosher cereals to kosher snacks, everything that had been purchased at the local establishments. And she's shocked, she's overwhelmed. And she walks up to her mother and she says, "What's going on?" So her mother says, "When I went to sleep, you were so negative, you were so antagonistic towards this whole idea." And her mother said that, "You know, while you were sleeping, your father and I were talking, and we realized that at the end of the day, we know that deep inside of us, there's a Jewish soul. And we obviously sent you to Israel to try to connect to that Jewish soul. And if this is how you want to manifest your Jewish identity, if this is how you want to express that which is meaningful to you, then we want to be supportive, we want to be behind you. And so while you were sleeping, I got in my car and I drove, this was in Bergen County, I drove to Glatt Express, and I bought out aisles of the store, stocked our home, all of the non-kosher items are in crates, ready to be donated away. And we want to try to make this work for you. We want to try to make this something that you could do." I don't know if Hannah related to them at the time that this would also entail blowtorching all of their pots and pans and equipment and boiling all their silverware. But I do know that that was an extraordinary moment. It was a moment where a parent made a choice, made a decision, that instead of feeling rejected by their child's interest in transcending their spirituality and their commitment to Yiddishkeit beyond that which they were coming from, they made a choice to embrace it, and they made a choice to encourage it, and they made a choice that their home would be a source of nurturing and cultivation for these types of this type of growth. And I think that even though most of our children will return from summer camp or return from their summer experiences in Israel, in Europe, in the Catskills, in the Poconos, Pennsylvania, all throughout the United States and beyond, even though most of them will probably return with a less dramatic transformation than the decision to keep kosher in a non-kosher home, I think that if we are attuned to the fact that so many of our children, so many of our students are returning with a spark, are returning, emerging from an experience that was transformative, that was edifying, in terms of how they relate to their spirituality, I think we have to realize that when they walk through that door and they throw down their duffel bag and we tell them, don't even put the clothes away, put them straight in the wash, and we have those initial moments where they come running off the bus, those initial moments where they come home right before they go crash and go to sleep, and we just hear a little bit about what they were doing and what the experience was like, I think we have to recognize how precious those moments are. Because those are the moments where we are going to convey to them whether or not our disposition is to encourage and to support their spiritual and religious growth, or whether or not to some extent we feel somewhat threatened, we feel somewhat uncomfortable, we feel that there's somewhat of a dissonance between this renewed sense of passion that many of them return from their summer experiences with and the general tone of spirituality that permeates our home. And so therefore, I would like to discuss a little bit really the various elements that comprise the growth of spirituality that many students experience throughout their summer, and how the transition from that environment, from that atmosphere, back into our homes and into our regular normal life, how we as parents could help facilitate that transition in a way that we're able to perpetuate their accomplishments and not, God forbid, undermine them. So I'd like to begin with a focus on the value of the home when it comes to the edification of spirituality. And I would like to share with you two quotes, both of them from a towering figure in the world of Torah, from Rabbi Yosef Soloveitchik. The first quote comes from the Rav's famous tribute to the Tolna Rebbetzin. And within that tribute, he says the following. And this is really the Rav emoting his connection to spirituality. We know that the Rav was a phenomenal figure in terms of his Talmudic scholarship, in terms of his scholarship of philosophy, in terms of his intellectual accomplishments. We know that he was highly educated and really left a lifetime of legacy in terms of substantive academic, both from a Torah scholarship perspective and a secular scholarship perspective, a legacy that is unparalleled in Jewish history. And so, therefore, I believe that this quote is particularly poignant in terms of us trying to reach into not the mind of the Rav, but the heart of the Rav. And the Rav says the following: most of all, I learned from my mother that Judaism expresses itself not only in formal compliance with the law, but also in a living experience. She taught me that there is a flavor, a scent, a warmth to mitzvos. I learned from her the most important thing in life is to feel the presence of the Almighty and the gentle pressure of His hand resting upon my frail shoulders. Without her teachings, which quite often were transmitted to me in silence, I would have grown up a soulless being, dry and insensitive. And we know that one of the most remarkable aspects of the Rav was this amazing balance of a highly emotional, introspective individual and a really towering, rational, penetrating, intellectual individual. And so what the Rav is basically telling us is that more so from any of the yeshivas that he might have learned in, from any of the rabbeim that he might have had throughout his lifetime, from his experiences sitting with his talmidim over decades at Yeshiva University, from his leadership experiences in Boston, at the end of the day, where is the source of our leader, Rav Yosef Soloveitchik Zatzal? Where is the source of his spirituality coming from? Where is the reservoir of emotional sensitivity and the experiential dimension of Yiddishkeit that characterized his entire life? Where is the source of that edification? It comes from his home. It comes from his mother. It comes from the environment that she created and the things that she said and didn't say to nurture that aspect of the Rav's life. And in addition, I want to share with you one other quote that captures the Rav's frustration with the inability to go ahead and perpetuate that dimension of Yiddishkeit within the framework of his classroom, within the structure and the regimented framework of the Rav's shir. And the Rav writes the following, it's in his work, Al Ahavas HaTorah, in an essay, and he writes the following: while I have succeeded to a great or small degree as a teacher and a guide in the area of Gadlus HaMochin, in the area of the greatness of the mind, I have not seen much success in my efforts in the experiential arena. I was not able to live together with them. He's talking about his students, to cleave to them and to transfer to them the warmth of my soul. My words, it seems, have not kindled the divine flame in sensitive hearts. And the truth is, we know that the Rav was a very inspirational figure. And many people found their inspiration and their motivation in their experience learning with the Rav. But in terms of the Rav's perspective of what could be accomplished in the context of the classroom, in the structure of the academic environment, it's just not the same as when one is able to immerse oneself in either the environment of the home or the environment that we are discussing today, the world of camp, the world of the summer experience. And the truth is that this is what we see, that one's spirituality, one's ta'am for Yiddishkeit, one's passion for Yiddishkeit, one's ability to prioritize one's sense and identity as a Jew over all of the different challenges of life, this is not found in the data or the information that we give to our children. This is found in the experiential realm. And our schools, as incredible as they are, and they are, in the history of the Jewish people, never have we experienced such a renaissance of formal Jewish education. Never have we produced such generations of unbelievably knowledgeable Jews. And it's an amazing thing to watch. And every generation just becomes more qualified and more knowledgeable in terms of their relationship to Torah. But we know that we are also experiencing some challenging consternation when it comes to the sense of pride, the sense of identity, the sense of spirituality, the sense of passion that our students exude and our students express. And our schools are not necessarily the ideal context to cultivate that, because while they do an extraordinary job with much supplementary informal education with Shabbatons, with opportunities for more informal connections with their teachers, their rabbeim, their moros, with all sorts of extracurricular activities. At the end of the day, the school environment is a judgmental environment. It is an environment where one has to strive for academic excellence. It's an environment where one is graded. And so therefore, when those doors open on the last day of school and the students flee from the Beis HaSefer, and they go and they immerse themselves in the environment of the camp, in the environment of the summer program, one finds a completely different identity. And if any parents have ever spent a Shabbos at a camp, instead of just going for a visiting day, if you ever spent a Shabbos at a camp, it's just a remarkable thing to see. No matter what type of camp it is, you see all of a sudden the same group of kids that at your Shabbos table you can't get them to sing one song, can't get them to sing one verse of a song, that in shul you can't get them to sit still for more than 3 minutes, that you can't get them to focus on a Dvar Torah for more than 30 seconds. You see all of a sudden, you see a unbelievable fervor, a spiritual yearning. You walk into a camp on a Friday night, you see kids cheering on their chairs, you see them singing, you see them dancing, you see them completely focused and absorbed in their learning groups, you see them involved in all sorts of activities and programs that have highly creative educational content, and they're able to focus themselves for long periods of time. You see them walking around camp with their counselors, with their advisors, having deep, introspective, meaningful conversations. You see them talking amongst each other about issues in life that are more profound, that are more significant. And the question is, why is that happening? And we're going to explore that a little bit together. But most importantly, we're going to explore how we can ensure that aspect of the experience, that oasis of spiritual immersion, can be as much as possible transitioned back when the students return, when our children return to our environment. So what is it that defines the summer experience that we need to learn how to absorb and incorporate as best we can into our world of Jewish life, into how we're raising our children, into how we're educating our children? So number one, camps and summer programs focus less on religious achievement and more on religious growth. We're a very measured, metrics-based society. And we don't realize necessarily the degree to which we have superimposed our business world's demand, healthy demand, for a return on investment, for a clear measure of success, for a definitive and clear goal, for a mission statement. How much we have allowed that type of framework to really take hold of our entire educational experience. And I'm not saying it's the wrong thing to do. It may very well be the right thing to do. But at the end of the day, students are rewarded based on religious achievement. There's very little space in an academic environment or in our community in general to recognize the godless, to recognize the greatness of a student moving from not being interested in going to shul at all to being interested to going to shul for a half hour. The question that simply asked is the student in shul for davening or not? And if they are, they've achieved the goal of davening. If they are not, they haven't achieved the goal of davening. But the opportunity to try to provide students an environment where they can celebrate incremental success, where even if they're not reaching the ultimate goal, but the very process of taking a step forward, rather than remaining entrenched in the apathy that so often takes hold of them and their lives, that very dimension of their growth, that is extremely rewarded in the camp and informal educational environment and summer programs and all of these trips. That the students don't necessarily have to do everything. That they're given the opportunity, and they're given opportunities in so many different modalities to be able to take a step forward, to be able to progress. To focus on religious growth, not just religious achievement. And we have to ask ourselves, to what degree, when they return home, are we able to fashion the environment in our home so that we are extremely supportive when the students not only accomplish something religiously, but when they take that step forward? Are we rewarding to that in terms of the reinforcement we give them? Are we rewarding to that in terms of the trust that we invest in them? That, you know, sometimes they're not able to sit through all of shul, all of davening, it's too much. But when the kid has to, let's say, they can't sit through all of Kriyas HaTorah, they're going to sit through one Aliyah of Kriyas HaTorah, are we able to congratulate them, to support them, to give them a sense of accomplishment for going from 0 to 1, even though they haven't gone from 0 to 7? That doesn't mean the ultimate goal isn't 7. But the question is, are we able to validate the incremental success in such a way that they're motivated to keep going and they don't think that everything less than 7 is automatically a void? The second dimension of the summer experience that is extremely edifying to our youth, and certainly something that is distinguished from our world, is the focus on individuality. And that is the notion, like the Gemara says, Kishem Shepartuseim Einon Shavos, Kachtei Osein Einon Shavos. Everybody looks different, everybody thinks different, and everyone has their own individual spiritual proclivities. Everyone has their own individualized spiritual dispositions. In camps and summer programs, in less defined and structured and regimented environments than the classic, school and shul environment, students have the opportunity to discover the aspects of Yiddishkeit that speak to them. Whether it's the dramatic presentations, whether it's the music, whether it's the singing, whether it's the more, camp-wide experiences for those who are traveling, whether it's the experience visiting Poland, whether it's the connection to Israel, whether it's the more, physical experience of just traveling the land and hiking, whether it's the more spiritual moments of visiting various Mekomos Kedoshim. But students have an opportunity to be presented with a myriad of spiritual experiences from which they can choose and select that which speaks to them. And the question is, when they return and we are trying to now absorb them back into the reality of the world, are we attuned, and we'll discuss this a little bit more soon, are we attuned to the discoveries that they may have made within themselves about their own particular individual spiritual dynamics that may be really revealing an extremely core piece of information in helping them cultivate a more spiritual personality? The next aspect that a camp and a summer program will give a student, will give our children, is what I call the notion of religious maturation, which is that we all know that from when our children are very, very young, we essentially habituate them to much of their religious observance. I have a three-year-old daughter who, of course, now that she has achieved the high level of mature thinking of 3 years old, she's clearly ready to begin washing her hands for Hamotzi. So what do? We do the same thing that everyone does. You hold the kid over the sink, whether they're screaming or not screaming. You fill up the cup. You start pouring the water on their hands. You try to get them to mimic the articulations of the bracha. They finish with some word that vaguely sounds like Yadayim, and everyone screams, Amen. And the kid is smiling, and everyone's smiling, and we're all so excited that we've been able to motivate and inspire this three-year-old to involve themselves in a ritual. And the truth is, while I'm exaggerating somewhat, this is the way we introduce so much of what Yiddishkeit is about to our children. We turn benching into what's essentially a sing-song, and it's fine, because that is the way a child can absorb and habituate and become familiar with the world of religious life. The challenge is that as the children mature, we don't ever really take a moment to step back and ensure that we are maturing their understanding and connection to these rituals as well. So at no point necessarily in the maturation process in the home does a parent turn to a child and say, you know what, you're a little old to be singing benching. Maybe we should be learning benching. Maybe you should understand what these words mean. As we all know, most of benching has nothing to do with food. The very first paragraph does. A lot of it is all sorts of thematic elements of Jewish life. Yushalayim, Talmud Torah, all sorts of aspects of Jewish life. Mashiach, Eliyahu Hanavi. So, and that is true about many aspects of their religious observance. We teach them to daven essentially by presenting them at a point in their life where there's no way they could possibly understand all the words that they're saying. And then the question is, do we ever return to those elements to try to make sure that before they become cynical and uninterested and bored and turned off, that before that happens, are we sort of catching them again at those transition points, which is very hard for a school to do because many students go through those transition points at different times. Certainly boys and girls go through those transition points at different times. And every individual hits those transition points at different times, which is why it's so critical for the home to be so much of a source of this. And therefore, it's also critical that we ourselves as parents are familiar with the reasons why we do things, with the meaning behind what we're doing, with what's going on as part of religious life, so that we can introduce these higher levels of thinking to the students. In the camp environment, in the summer program environment, very often students are given, for the first time, you know, all it's revealed to them a lot of the underlying reasons and explanations and what's the motivations behind so many of the different aspects of Yiddishkeit. And that is definitely something to incorporate as we bring them home. The next component that's extremely important and is very, very significant in terms of their spiritual growth over the summer is the value of mentorship. And that is that we all know, especially as kids get older and enter the adolescent phase of their life, the preteen, teenager phase of their life, they are naturally, and this is a healthy thing, beginning to individuate, beginning to assert their independence. And that creates a normal response of some sense of dissonance with the nature of authority. And so authority figures in the world of a teenager become somewhat hostile to their equilibrium. And the truth is, it could be a Rebbe, it could be a teacher, it could be a principal, it could be an advisor, it could be a parent. But we all know that there are very often children will find things to do that almost go out of their way to frustrate an authority figure. And that is because they're trying to make their own person. They're trying to take everything we gave them over all these years and figure out, who do they want to be? To what extent did they want to be like me? To what extent do they want to be like you? To what extent do they want to be like their friends? And that process is a normal process. Intervening in that process could create a very unhealthy adult, ultimately. That is when parents become too stifling and too controlling, and that is extremely unhealthy. But you know the most significant figure in the life of a preteen or a teenager to help them through this process in a healthy way? The most significant figure is a mentor. A mentor is someone who's not necessarily a full-fledged authority figure, although a healthy mentor will set limits because teenagers want limits, even if they don't articulate it and express it, will set limits within that relationship and also because as an outgrowth of that relationship. But nevertheless, the mentor serves as a role model. The mentor takes an active interest in their life and doesn't have to. The mentor's not trying to control them. The mentor's trying to motivate and inspire them. The mentor has been where they've been, where they are, not so long ago. The mentor is a little younger. They're college age, a little bit older, and they know how to relate to it. They were also struggling with many of the same struggles. And we can't underestimate, the value of the relationship that develops between the students and their counselors, the students and their advisors. And the question is whether or not we can find opportunities and ways when they return to perpetuate these mentoring relationships. And sometimes that entails us as parents making that a priority, whether it's, you know, their counselors in from out of town and making sure our schedule is such that they can connect back to them, whether it's encouraging our students to in a vacation opportunity to be able to go and visit them. We can demonstrate overt support and encouragement, not too much, because then the authority figure becomes validating to the mentor and then the rebellion could express itself through the mentor, but we can show, we can demonstrate, and we can facilitate. Even if we're not being so overt about it, we can facilitate the opportunity for the students to perpetuate that relationship. The next thing that their students are getting from these environments, and this is probably one of the most significant factors in the ability of camps and summer programs to create a more spiritual atmosphere, is they are really in an oasis that has shielded them from much of the world of cynicism. The programming, the tone of camp is one that is kulo positive. I mean, if you've ever spent time at camp, things that people would mock in any other environment, people standing up on chairs and cheering, we've got Ruach, yes we do, we've got Ruach, how about you? People, you know, just dressing up in absolutely absurd ways, all sorts of thematic days, all sorts of interactive programming. On summer programs, there are countless examples of this. They really work extremely hard to create an atmosphere that is devoid of cynicism, that expels mockery. Even the humor that is incorporated in camp tries extremely hard to make sure that cynicism is not an underlying component of it. And that's one of the reasons why students begin to open up, because we don't appreciate how much mockery and cynicism really removes from the chance for them to take a step forward. If a youngster feels, if a teenager feels, or a preteen or an adolescent feels that by them making a choice one particular day to try to invest a little bit more in their focus on tefillah, to try to be a little bit more serious about the singing at a Shabbos table, about taking Shabbos seriously, about going to a shir or learning, if they know that that's going to be greeted with a sense of mockery and cynicism, why are you becoming so frum, you're becoming there, all your tittus are out, if they know that that's going to be the reaction, that has a very big impact on them. Because if there's one thing that teenagers do, is they define themselves based on what everyone else thinks. And they know that if everyone else thinks what they're doing is insignificant, is unimportant, is not cool, then that's going to detract from their motivation to do it. So when the students return, that's a very big component. We'll look at that soon as well. And finally, the final dimension that I think is important to keep in mind is many of our students, many of our teenagers, they have a lot of questions about fundamentals of Judaism. They have a lot of questions about life that we don't really get to. Sometimes we don't get to them because it's just not the nature of our relationship with them. Sometimes we don't get to them because we avoid them, because we don't know how to present them to a youngster. And sometimes we don't get to them because we ourselves are unsure about the answers to these questions. But in these environments, in the camp and the summer program environments, very often students are given the opportunity to really be able to expand their horizons in terms of their questions, their criticisms, their just their general inquisitiveness about why we do what we do, how we know there's a Ribbono Shel Olam, how we know the Torah is true, why do we have to listen to the rabbis, why all these restrictions, why so many details, does God really care about whether or not I'm texting on Shabbos? All these questions that really are fermenting within the hearts and minds of our teens and our adolescents, a lot of these are able to be addressed in the context of a more informal atmosphere. Students feel less threatened to pose these questions, that there'll be some sort of heretical, you know, characterization of them. The famous quote from Rav Volbi, that there are no heretical questions, there are only heretical answers. And that's an important factor in what contributes to the growth of these students. I want to share with you a study that was done by the American Camping Association, not a Jewish organization, the American Camping Association. And they obviously are extremely interested in advocating for the value of summer camp, summer experiences. And so they commissioned a study to try to determine the degree to which campers grow in their appreciation for and expression of the values and ideals that camps are trying to instill as a result of the program, and the degree to which they grow in spirituality. They actually measured these two things separately. The first study was on the questions of values and ideals, and the second was on spirituality. And I thought that the response, that the conclusions of this study were fascinating, and I leave them to you to kind of interpret, but I'll tell you my own spin. Regarding values, when they asked a large group of campers before camp and after camp, did you experience a change in the thoughtfulness that you have towards how you make decisions relative to the value system that we are trying to instill, the campers reported no change. Campers said no. Campers said, the same way I made decisions before camp, I make decisions after camp. However, when they asked the parents, do you notice a change in your children's patterns of analysis and thoughtfulness and consideration in how they make choices from before the summer experience and after the summer experience, the parents said absolutely yes, no question. So that dissonance is in need of explanation. On the second front, on the front of spirituality. So they asked the campers and the parents the same thing. And here's what's interesting. Both the campers and the parents reported a growth, a tangible growth, self-reported a tangible growth in spirituality, however that's defined for everybody, from the beginning, from the pre-camp experience to the post-camp experience. The campers said, even though we don't make decisions differently in terms of our values, we do feel more spiritual after this summer experience than we did before the summer experience. And the parents report that the students feel more spiritual at the end of the summer experience than at the beginning of the summer experience. But then they ask the same question 6 months later, 6 months after camp. Do you still now, 6 months out, feel the resonating effects of your spiritual growth in the camp? And here, there was a difference. Here, the camper said no, that it had dissipated. And it was gone, out of sight, out of mind. Camp is over, I'm back to the way I was. The parents reported yes, that many of these changes were in fact still present. So what emerges from these studies is that it's clear from a more objective outsider perspective that the camp experience has an extraordinary impact on the student, on their spiritual development, on their value system development. But what's also clear is that the campers themselves are less attuned to the development. That they don't necessarily experience, they don't necessarily feel it, they don't necessarily know it, they're not attuned to it. Which means that when your child comes home, they're not going to come running into the house and say to you, guess how much I grew over the summer? Guess how much I spiritually developed over the summer? This is not going to be a report that you're going to be handed by you know, our children that says, you know, before the summer I didn't take Shabbos so seriously and now I'm ready to take it more seriously. If we want to create this transition, if we want to ensure that our children can perpetuate the growth that they experienced over the summer, we need to open the lines of communication with them. We need to, you know, it's like when we have an NCSY Shabbaton and students are extremely inspired and overwhelmed, not that many go home. And when the parents say, how was the Shabbaton? What do they tell them? They tell them this thing was wrong and that thing was wrong and I didn't like the food. And I didn't, right? They don't say, the average teenager, the 11th grader, doesn't walk into the house after a Shabbaton and say, guess what? I felt a Kadosh Baruch Hu. I felt spirituality. It's just not what teenagers report. And so if you want to get into that part of their life and make an impact on that part of their life, the first thing you have to do is open the lines of communication, is develop a world of discussions. And that means that when we sit down with them when they come home and we're asking about their experiences and looking at their pictures, to ask pointed questions. Which scholar in residence that you had for Shabbos did you like the most? Oh, Charlie Harari? Wow, that's amazing. What about Charlie did you love so much? Oh, he was a dynamic speaker. What did he speak about? What did he, you know, which overnight program did you like the most? What part of the, you know, there are many questions that we can ask them to try to extract from them what aspects of the experience spoke to them. And that's stage one, that's the most important thing. The most important thing is to open those lines of communication. Did you enjoy the learning components of the camp? What parts of it did you enjoy? Get them to talk, sit there, look at their pictures, ask them about their friends, ask them about their counselors. Where do they go to school? What are they doing in life? What's going on? What did you learn about them? Because through that communication, you will begin to get a greater insight into the aspects of the experience that impacted them the most. And you may be shocked which aspects impacted them most. We don't always see the changes taking place in the tumultuous years of adolescence within the minds of our children. And we may be surprised that our students found nature inspiring. But you know, it's very relevant. If your kid tells you, you know, one of my favorite parts of camp was we went on this night walk through the forest and there was no talking, there was no anything, and I it was really amazing. It was just, you know, to be, you know, with nature outside, it was incredible. That's gold, that information. That's gold. That means that as we decide as a family what to do throughout the year, thinking that what teenager would want to go see Niagara Falls, maybe that is a good destination, or maybe that is a good opportunity. You're choosing what trip to let the student go on throughout the year in terms of expenses. That's important information. The second thing that's extremely important is to not be cynical. Is to not be cynical about anything. To be totally, totally positive. Not to tell them about, you know, our years in camp and our escapades and what we did and what we, the shtick that we pulled and all the different things. to let them talk and let them emote and let them express and let them be excited and let them be enthusiastic, not to make fun, not to be condescending, not to be cynical, to allow them to see that in our home, they can be spiritual and they can be overt about their spirituality, and it is embraced. We love it. We're proud of it. It's fantastic. It's something that we want to ultimately provide for them. And the third thing is to try to isolate the aspects of this we spoke about a little bit before through the discussions, to try to isolate the aspects of spiritual growth that were significant to them and create opportunities for them throughout the year that engage those. So the student says, my most exciting part was when the group of developmentally disabled children came to visit our camp, and we ran a program with them. You know, I never realized what it was like to work with students like that, with children like that. It was really great. That is gold. That means that we should be picking up the phone and finding out how we can get our students more involved in Yachad or Ask or Beis Ezra or any of these types of programs. That is an opportunity to know what it is that's meaningful to them. If they found singing meaningful in large groups, we want to make sure that our kids go to Shabbatons and experiences that provide for that. If they found Israel something very, very resonating to them, you know, particularly, so that we want to find youth programs that focus their programming around Israel. We want to get in touch with the individuality and the dispositions of our youth and provide for them throughout the year. What the summer gives us is an insight into what it is that they want, that they need, that's meaningful to them. And we want to provide throughout the year opportunities to nurture that. And that is really ultimately our goal. And I would be remiss if I didn't just end with one important element, and that is that at the end of the day, any discussion about spirituality, any discussion about ruchnius, about enabling our children to find more passion and enthusiasm in Judaism, at the end of the day, our kids will never be more spiritual than us without the intervention of someone else. And that's important to know, because we are the model. We are the ones that create the normative standard and expectations in our home. How we comport ourselves relative to our own spiritual growth. And it doesn't mean we have to walk around being gdolim in spirituality. But we do have to walk around concerned about spirituality and growing in spirituality. And if they don't see us reaching out to our rabbis, to our teachers, to the programs that are being run in our shuls, to going online and listening to a shiur, to, you know, this summer a lot of focus on Daf Yomi, to committing to a regimented learning program. If they don't see us modeling this, the values will not come from nowhere. The only way that the student will grow is if they go and attain those values from someone else. And I don't know about you, but my goal in life is for all of the different individuals that are involved in my children's education to be partners with me in raising my children with the value system that I believe in. I'm not interested in delegating my obligation of Vishinantam Levanecha, my obligation of the Arba Banim, my obligation of telling my children the Jewish story and having them understand how proud they should be to be religious Jews and to stand up in a world and recognize that they have something so precious and so beautiful. I want that to come from me. I'm not interested in that being instilled by somebody else. There is so much that others could do to help edify that process, to help contribute to that process, to help be partners in that process. My children aren't going to listen to me about everything. My children are going to go through a phase where they're not interested in what I have to say. And I need those partners, and I want those partners. But it's my value system. That's what I want to give over, my value system. And so my value system has to be alive in my home, whatever it is. It can be left, it can be right, it can be middle, it can be off center. Whatever it is, it has to be alive. It has to be real, it has to be authentic, it has to be sincere, and it has to be passionate. And if it is, then very often, yes, our teenagers will go through their years of rebellion. And our teenagers will go through their years where they reject us and what we represent. Of course, and to some extent, every teenager will go through that, and it's healthy. But at the end of the day, there is a reservoir of support there. There is a cushion for the fall. there is a recognition that we as your parents are raising you in this world to have a certain set of values. And we want those values to be manifest in your life in the way in which you relate to them as an individual. So just because I relate to Talmud Torah through Daf Yomi, you don't have to relate to Talmud Torah through Daf Yomi. But I want you to relate to Talmud Torah. I relate to tefillah by going to a shul that takes 3 hours to daven, because the rabbi speaks too long. You don't have to go to a shul that takes 3 hours to daven, but I want you to go to shul. I want you to relate to tefillah. What tefillah do you relate to? You love the Karbach Minyan in Camp Marashan Friday night? You love the dancing around in the NCSY Summer Kolo on Friday night? Let's find a shul where you can have that kind of experience. Let's be flexible in terms of what we want so that you could find expression for your individual spirituality in the framework of your life. And I believe that a spirituality is a core priority for us and for in our lives, and we are open and communicating with our children about these values, and we strive to individualize the opportunities that we provide to our children for them to develop their own spirituality. I believe that short of a crisis that's unavoidable and extremely difficult to predict or address, but that the standard student, the standard teenager, our children, will be able to grow up with all of the opportunities in the world to develop a healthy and passionate religious personality. Thank you.